Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
I remember, just to kind of paint a picture for you, I remember laying in the ICU kind of one night and woke up and I went to scratch my nose and, I was laying on my back and I remember going to scratch my nose and I didn't have the tricep muscle. So my hand just kind of fell on my face. And then I looked down at my atrophied arms and body. And I just remember how fast I went from like being this strong, athletic young man to looking down and just being kind of just a bag of bones, you know. I mean, I was like that was very hard pill to swallow at that moment.
We've all been put here for a reason, and we all deserve acceptance.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. I am just going to start out. I like to start out light, but today, sometimes I don't start out light. Today, I actually have a male speaker and author that I'm going to introduce in a second, so maybe he can pipe in on this. But I have been just devastated by the loss of Stephen Boss Twitch to suicide. I think when I think about it, just with my own struggles, with my own mental health and everything I went through in the past few years, and maybe I can bring Rick in here. It's just a reminder. I mean, for me, I would watch his wife's Instagram, and I remember occasionally I would catch him on Ellen and I would think, oh my gosh, like he's just such a bright light and his family was so beautiful and they're dancing, like they look so in love and so happy. And it's just a reminder that, number one, social media can be a facade, right? So that's the first point, that you never know what somebody's going through in their life, in their personal life. And don't judge social media by like what's reality, because it's just not. You put your best foot forward on social media. That's why I really try to be transparent on my own social media. But I wanted to point out reach out to your friends, like your friends that you think might be doing the best, right? Your friends that are always laughing, your friends that you think have this great life. Check in on them. Check in on your friends. Check in on your family. The suicide rates in the United States have skyrocketed and are the highest of all time. And I can tell you that you can look at my pictures, you can hear my story and know that I also was suicidal. And I chose to stay. And it really breaks my heart that, especially for men and in the Black community, just knowing that I've interviewed somebody that was in the Black community and talked about like being a minority and asking for help, it's just not accepted. So I'll introduce Rick Weary. Rick is an author. He is a speaker. He has the patience of a saint, because I can tell you that we had some major issues trying to record a couple weeks ago. And my power went out or something. And then I couldn't get my Wi-Fi to work. And he was so kind about it. So I already know that this is just the most tremendous individual. And once you hear his story, you're going to like him even more. But Rick, before we start, can you touch on what I just said? Because I think being male, especially, it's so hard for men to talk about mental health. And I always love when I have male guests coming on telling their stories.
Oh, this is a perfect topic for me as well. You know, I mean, I talk about it in my book, and maybe we can get into it a little bit later. But I too struggled. You know, I don't think the answer is the same for everybody, but we're all a community. And anytime you can reach out and help or anything, like my dad, he's a farmer, right? And he drives down the road so slow, right? And when people get behind him and I'm like riding with him, I'm like, speed up, Dad. And one thing he's always told me is, he's like, I'm always driving, I'm just looking out. And if I see somebody on the side of the road or if I see somebody, I'm always noticing things. And you know, that's a good lesson, you know, try to notice if someone looks down one day, and the smallest things can spark positivity. So.
Oh, I love that. What a tremendous human being your father sounds like. It's so true. We don't think we're all so busy, and especially being the holidays. By the way, when this comes out, it won't be the holidays, because I'm now pre-recording a month out. So sometimes my stories might be behind for my listeners and my audience, but the topic is always the same. And the topic is, your mental health matters. If you have the best job in the world and you have more money than God and you have the nicest cars and the nicest clothes, none of that stuff matters if you don't work on your insides. So I'll get off my pedestal right now. And Rick, thank you so much for coming on and your patience for being such a patient person and with my nightmare of trying to get you scheduled. Rick's book is called Red Letter Days. Rick's story is, I actually don't usually seek out guests. I mean, I do sometimes, but for some reason, I don't know how I found you, Rick, but you were on something and I reached out to you and I said, I need to have you on my podcast. I don't remember what it was. It was some post or something you posted. And I was so inspired by your story that I really felt the need to have you on. So why don't we kind of start with your background? I know you're in freezing cold Utah right now, and you made fun of me for complaining about the weather in LA.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Roosevelt, Utah, on a dairy farm. I grew up loving sports. The main reason I love sports so much is because I could get out of like chores on the farm if I were as busy with sports. I'm a small town, just a country boy. And, I was the youngest of four kids. And, I was just a country boy. That's the best way I can explain it.
What was your sport? What was your baseball? What was your sport?
Yeah, baseball was my favorite, but I also played football mm-hmm. and then a little bit of basketball also. So, and now.
Okay. So you were
enjoy
very
it even
athletic.
More coaching my kids. Yeah. I was athletic, strong, and, healthy and whatnot.
Okay. And so your childhood, your upbringing was living on a farm. It sounds like you have an amazing father. Pretty happy childhood.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't complain about my upbringing. If anything, I feel like sometimes I'm doing my kids a disservice, letting them watch YouTube, because for me, there was always work to be done and stuff. And sometimes there's like not a lot for me to keep my kids active. And so that's what I do. I like to coach them in sports and work with them, and that's kind of like our hobbies too. We like following them around to their baseball tournaments or whatnot. So, we love it.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about what your accident, if you're okay kind of going there, and what inspired you to like share your story and write your book.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in Utah, and in most rural areas, they do a program for young couples. It's called self-help housing, and you got to be kind of skilled and know the construction field. And I was a construction plumber at the time. My wife and I, we were kind of college sweethearts, and we got married. We had been married for a year, and we joined this program and started building our own house. And what you do is you get together with like a group of 10 other couples, or families, and you actually do the work on your own house. And it's a way to build sweat equity and get into your first house affordably. And I was working one night, and you were supposed to carry on all this work and do your everyday 40-hour day job. And so we would work nights and weekends, and anytime we got a chance, we were just over here at the at the job site doing whatever tasks we were told. And we were working late one Sunday night. We started around like 4, and we had planned on working like the whole night. We had lights set up and everything. And I was working with my friend Zach, and we were just working on his actual house, which is actually 2 doors down from my house. And I was building a wall on the floor. I was building it and getting ready to stand it up, and I shot a nail into the to construct the wall, and I nailed that nail hit a knot in the wood, and it like ricocheted up and then shot into like the web of my thumb. So I had a nail right there sticking out of my thumb, and I was a tough guy. Again, I mentioned that I was a tough guy. So I asked my friend, Zach, who I was with, to pull it out. And he did. He grabbed his Leatherman and pulled it out. And it didn't, it hurt a little bit, but I was just trying to act tough. And as I was looking down at that nail, I started to get lightheaded. And it's weird because I had mentioned I grew up on a dairy farm. And so we had our share of blood and guts, and I felt like I was pretty, I doctored cows, and felt like I wasn't, blood never scared me until this day or whatever. I was looking down at my own thumb and a little hole in my thumb, and it made me lightheaded. And so I started walking across the floor to get a drink, and I thought that would solve the issue. And as I was walking, I passed out. And earlier that day, we had cut the hole out of the floor where the stairs go, and we hadn't built the stairs yet. And so as I was walking across, I tipped over and fell into that hole that was in the floor, and fell directly into the basement. I landed on the top of my head right here at about C6, C7 vertebrae, and broke my neck right about there. And I was laying in the basement, scared. I didn't know what to do or say, or, you know, and my friend Zach called the ambulance. The ambulance came. I was laying in the basement, and this is in March in Utah, and so there was a little bit of ice in the, like, the, it had snowed the day before. It had shoveled as much snow, but it melted and then frozen. And so I was in like a layer of ice about that thick, you know, just laying there. And I caught pneumonia even laying in there. And that was later be kind of the thing that just about killed me. But I got ambulance to the Richfield Hospital, and then they lifelighted me to Provo, Utah Hospital. The helicopter touched off at 11 o'clock, and here's a kind of crazy thing. The next hour at midnight would be the next day, March 10th, and that would have been my 1 year anniversary with my wife.
Oh. So tell me, I'm so sorry. Like, what a scary thing to happen, and just how quickly it can happen. You know, how quickly your life can change in a blink of an eye. Were you awake during that whole experience? Like, you hit your head and didn't pass out? You knew what was going on? Or
so I was. My friend Zach woke me up down in the basement and explained to me what had happened. He explained to me, and I was awake from then on. I was awake in the ambulance. I remember telling Zach that I couldn't feel my legs. And I remember, it's kind of weird, I didn't really even think about my hands or my arms until I remember I was in the ICU and I had caught pneumonia, I mentioned. And so with newly paralyzed lungs, pneumonia was the thing that just about killed me. So what they did is they put me on a tracheotomy where you breathe through right here and they bypass your mouth and throat, and so you can't speak. I was on a medically induced coma to where... they wanted to keep me stable because of they wanted to protect the spine. They didn't want me moving around. So they would basically keep me in a coma, and I'd wake up for short periods of time. And once I started moving around enough, they'd just drug me enough to keep me back asleep and stable. But eventually go ahead.
I was just going to say, how long were you in the coma? How long were you in the how long were you hospitalized? I mean, that's terrifying.
So I was in the ICU for about 2 weeks, and then so I was in the coma for I think a week. That's just guessing; I don't remember the details. And then they moved me from the ICU to a neuro rehab unit. And that's where the PTs and OTs would come in and work with you every day and rehab you basically to try to get you to be able to be the most independent as possible. That's their goal, to get you back into life and living in your house and stuff. And I remember, just to kind of paint a picture for you, I remember laying in the ICU kind of one night and woke up, and I went to scratch my nose, and I was laying on my back, and I remember going to scratch my nose, and I didn't have the tricep muscle, so my hand just kind of fell on my face. And then I looked down at my atrophied arms and body, and I just remember how fast I went from like being this strong, athletic young man to looking down and just being kind of just a bag of bones, you know. I mean, I was like that was very hard pill to swallow at that moment.
Yeah. And tell me what that feeling is like, because really there's nothing. I can't imagine the feeling of just being like, I can't use my legs anymore. I can't. My life is completely changed, right? I no longer am the person I once was physically on the outside. I'm going to have to relearn the whole process of living and being a whole new person, really. What I can only imagine what that would feel like, and the pain and the anger and all the stages that you probably went through. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I remember just the smallest of tasks would become so frustrating. When I was on my trach, my wife, it was back when we had flip phones, she needed to check my voicemail on my phone. And so she had to type in the 4 digits. And so I was unable to speak, unable to hold up a digit on my hand because my hands were paralyzed. And we got so frustrated because she was, the only way that I could relay that message was for her to read my lips. And we'd get, you know, get the wrong number, and I'd get frustrated, and no, that's not, you know, and we have to start over, whatnot. Just the smallest of things were just so, became so challenging and hard. And I remember too, when I was in the rehab unit, my sleep was just all over the place. I'd sleep all day, and then I'd be like wide awake at night, and I just couldn't figure out a sleeping schedule. And so most of the time I'd have family around me during the day, especially my wife. But at nights I was like alone to my thoughts and alone. And man, that was where this like dark cloud of just, I guess, just depression and just like, why, you know, why did you take this away from me? And what was really interesting. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say the piece of it, of the why, right, in life, or if you're spiritual, why me? Why now? All of those questions. Are you spiritual?
Yeah, I tried to stay spiritual pretty much the most of the time.
But you probably had a hard time with that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think
God puts people into our places at certain times when we need it. For me, it was I was in rehab and wide awake one night, nobody around, and I had a nurse come in to my room, and she was a older lady, kind of a hard-nosed nurse. I could tell she'd been around for a while. And she brought in to me a calendar and a red marker. And she said to me, anytime, she says, stop feeling sorry for yourself and take a fresh start from today, and just say, today's your new life. And anytime you can do something today that you couldn't do yesterday, we're going to write it down and celebrate it. And we would have the weirdest accomplishments and the weirdest celebrations. And I think they were low on census at the time too. So they had like a lot of time to spend on me. And so we'd write these things down in this calendar that were silly, you know, it was just kind of at the time it was something to keep us busy, you know, but we would write down in this calendar, like today, Rick wheeled down the hall without help, you know, 50 yards. And I remember even we had the whole staff. There was a lady named Jenny May, and she was working somewhere else. She took a job, and so we were kind of celebrating her. And so we held a 1K, and we all walked 1K for Jenny May. And anyways, those were things that kept my mind off of the here and now, the situation. But then I eventually went home. I came home to my new house, and you know, time moves on, right? The newness of my injury, the newness of people coming around and visiting Rick had kind of worn off. And I spent a lot of time alone by myself. And, you know, this is kind of interesting how timing wise we were talking about Twitch and whatnot, and maybe this is, you know, the reason why, but this was where that dark cloud came back to me, and I wanted to end my life. I would remember thinking how crazy it was that I would just all of a sudden be coming up with ideas, and with my hands paralyzed, I remember thinking how pathetic it was that I was just coming up with trying to come up with an idea, and the only idea that I could figure out that would be the best situation is I wanted to push my wheelchair into a canal. And in my neighborhood, there's a canal that runs across my neighborhood and through my neighborhood. But I knew that there was a problem with that. I knew that I didn't think I could wheel myself to that canal. And there was a little hill to get up to that canal. And I didn't think I could do that. So what I did is I started, like, that was my new goal. Was to will myself a little bit further every day, so that eventually I could get up that hill and do the deed. And so I'd just go like a little bit further in increments. And one day I went to the bottom of the hill and like made it a little bit up. And I thought, you know, next trip I can do this. And so finally I rested a couple days, and then I thought about it, and you know, this was my day, so I was going to say goodbye to my wife, and said goodbye and wheeled all the way down the street, got to the bottom of this hill, and I looked at it as a challenge, and I got myself up to this hill and, you know, got up to the top of the hill. When I'm sitting at the top of the hill, I was thinking to myself that I had like set a goal and accomplished it. And, kind of interesting enough, the voice of that nurse and her words was like, accomplish something today that you couldn't do yesterday. And I thought to myself that I had just done that. I had accomplished something that I couldn't do. And physically, not just mentally, I physically did something that I couldn't do. And I talk about, when I motivational speak, I talk about how I lived two different lives. My life before my accident, where I was strong and I solved all my problems with just sheer strength. And then my life after my accident. And my second life didn't start when I broke my neck. My second life started that day. So
yeah,
to finish the story, I didn't push myself in the canal. I wheeled myself around the entire block that day, and I was proud of myself. That was the answer for me. I'm not saying it's the answer for anybody else, but that day I survived that day. And then I thought more about that concept of do something today that you couldn't do yesterday.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. and you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay, well, I'm now crying, so that's a beautiful story. Like, it really honestly is. And I think unless you've been in the amount of pain that you have, or you can understand what it's like to be a prisoner in your own mind, because that's what I think of when I think of, you know, I'll talk about my own experience with wanting to leave, and to have a moment that's a gift in so many ways where you're like, no, I'm not going out this way. I'm not going out this way. And your story is, you know, really hard to hear. It really is. But I think it's a testament to a human being's ability to overcome really anything. You know, we never know how long we're on this planet. You know, we're a decade now, to me, seems like it goes by in a flash, you know? And so no matter what our things that we have to go through in life, there's always a way to stay. You know, there's always a reason to stay. And your story really is the purpose why I think that you stopped yourself and then you wrote the book and then you're here to share to help other people, right? I hope that you see it that way, because I do. And you really just touched me, like my heart right now, because I really needed to hear that. And I think that a lot of my listeners, and sorry, because I cry pretty, I just surpassed my 100th episode. I think out of my 100 episodes, I probably cried on like 90 of them. So I'm a crier, but I also think it's just a story of the human, like a human's ability to be so resilient and overcome really anything. So, and I love that your nurse like was kind of like, I love hearing that there's people like that, like, you know, kind of like, get up, like you, this isn't done for you. You keep going, like, right. Stop being in like such self-pity. And sometimes we need to hear that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, I got an analogy for you, Megan. I like to hand cycle. I ride this hand cycle, and I go quite often ride around like the neighborhood and stuff. And my favorite distance is to go about 15 miles. And if I go 15 miles, there's this spot in the town across from me. It's this hill, right? And it's crazy because this hill is in Elsinore, Utah. If you're ever there, you know, you recognize. But there's a bike path. And what's interesting is to the right of you is like the freeway, and to the left of you is another hill. And you're going up this steep incline, and you're kind of tunneled in. And you can't... all you see is the top of the hill. And, you know, I'm a proponent of fitness and kicking your own butt, you know, and I always question my sanity when I'm riding up this hill, and just like, I feel like I'm like, all I'm doing is just suffering, you know, and uh-huh. I feel like in life, you know, here's your analogy. I feel like a lot of times we are the same way. We just feel like we're tunneled in by our problems. And, you know, eventually you get to the top of the hill. And what's interesting about this particular path is once you get to the top of the hill, you become, this isn't a word, but you become untunnelized, and you can see like the whole picture. You can see the whole valley. and you can look back at the hill and you realize that you suffered for a reason. You didn't just, it wasn't just torture. You know, you get to, you now get to go down the other side and, you know, like you get to enjoy your suffering, you know? And,
yeah,
Megan, don't tell my mom or my wife, but I can get like 30 miles an hour going down the other side. And like, it is worth
they
it.
They better, you know, listen. And then they'll know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I think so many people, yeah, people need to hear this. People need to hear your story. Tell me, once you got to the point of making the decision to stay, right? How did your life turn around? Were you that moment, that those seconds? I know for me, it just kind of hit me one day. And I hate to use my own story, but I can relate in different ways to the moment for me when I was sitting on the beach and I, you know, I talk about how I was done. I was done. I was like, I had a plan. I knew how I was going to go. I had obsessed about it for 6 months. And then I looked at my kids. That was the time when that day I looked at my kids and I just kind of was like, I don't want to do this anymore. But then something inside of me was like, I'm not going out this way. I can't leave my daughter, my older one, especially, and my younger one, but something about my older one, because I had lost my dad as a little girl. And I just thought, I was like, I don't want her to grow up without me. Like, I have work to do. And then I realized my purpose, which is kind of to tell my story. So more and more people like you and I kind of like, I kind of compare it to like building a fire, right? And we're like rubbing the two sticks together and then there's a spark. And then you share your story and then more people hear your story and they go, you know what, Rick, it's okay. Like, I can relate. Maybe it's not the pain that you went through in your accident, but it's, I can relate to you in a different way. And that's the purpose in so many ways.
Yeah. I got another analogy for you.
Okay, I love analogies, so, please. Okay, so that's okay. I love
so
it.
So I was listening to this podcaster the other day, and he was talking about the video game Mario, and immediately, like, that was my generation. Like, growing up, like, you could see Mario drop in, you know, do 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 do, and he'd go and he'd hit like the one up, you know, and he'd get, and then you'd die eventually, like your character would die, right? And what was crazy is this podcaster was like, if the game Mario were just like a green grass path and all you did is you dropped in and you went across and you went to the end, right? No challenges. He said, you'd probably like put that game down after like one try. I mean, it'd be boring. And it says the reason we loved Mario when we were kids is because we died, but we wanted to get to that position and just a little bit further every time. You know, you'd get to that fire breathing dragon and he'd kill you this time. He's like, I'm gonna get a little bit farther, you know. And I think if we like the thing we need to like tell our kids, are like people, that my message is everybody's going to have challenges in life. There's no life that is gifted with challenge free. You know, my challenge is, you know, I still even have challenges today, you know? But the thing is like, I feel like, if we can look at like our trials and whatnot as just like a challenge. How am I going to get past this and a little bit further? And I think together we can work on those challenges and help other people, you know, and I think, you know, Megan, it's pretty cool that you have a podcast and you have something that sets you apart from everybody else. You know, you have these gifts, you know, to help you through, right? And I thought I lost everything when I became paralyzed. I thought all my talent is gone. I don't have this physical body, but I realized that God blessed me with the ability to tell a good story and to motivate others. And, you know, we all have that. Everybody on this earth has certain talents, skills, abilities, and traits. And that's what helps us get through.
Oh, this is a heavy day. Can you tell me how you got to the point where, I mean, you obviously worked with your wife for a year when it happened. It must have been hard on a relationship because you were dealing with all the things that you were dealing with. But then you went on to have a family, correct?
Yeah. Yep. My wife is, she deserves more credit than I do as far as my survival story. I mean, she was there with me the whole time. She actually became a nurse after I, you know, because she saw what good nurses do and what bad nurses do. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time in the hospital. And my wife has been with me through the whole thing, you know, and truly a blessing to me. I couldn't make it a day without her now, even.
You have the most beautiful family. And I love that you've kind of gone on and written your book and, you know, you're a coach. And what else do you do now? I mean, also what you do, the hand cycle. So you aren't somebody obviously that just, you know, is like, this is my life now. I'm not going to be active. Tell me about that.
I like to be active, you know, and I think everybody mm-hmm. has this desire within them, but I have these moments where I can't sleep at night. You know, I think everybody does. And half of those nights are like the excited, like, oh, you know, Christmas is coming and I can't sleep because I'm excited to open the presents, right? But the other half of those nights are just nights where I kind of like lay awake and I try to think of like what's my next move, you know, and I have this big desire to make my mama proud, you know, and that's not just my mama, but like that's my term for like I want to do something that will make people proud of me or whatnot. And so I've had like I've been blessed in my life with just people around me who are willing to adapt with me, you know, because the reality of it is I'm in a wheelchair and, you know, I can do everything I need to, but sometimes I'm going to need help and people have been placed around me and I've had opportunities to go do things. And my philosophy is just never say no to those things. I ride a hand cycle. One of my favorite things to do is I play a sport called wheelchair rugby, and I play with a team out of Las Vegas, and it's pretty cool. That's like my favorite thing to talk about is rugby. If you have like a conversation, if you meet me, I'll be like, oh yeah, I play wheelchair rugby. You know, that's my biggest thing I like to brag about. A lot of my teammates are.
That's pretty cool.
The sport is basically for anybody in a wheelchair, anybody that's a quadriplegic, have to have impairment in all four limbs. And it's really cool. It's like my way of getting around people who have dealt with the same kind of issues that I have. And, you know, five or six guys that I get with down in Vegas, they're my best friends and my, you know, my brothers or whatnot, you know, so.
I love that you do that. I also that I think that's so great to be able to be around people that maybe can relate to the things that you've gone through in your own life. And I've never heard of that. I think that's so inspiring. Do you gamble when you're in Vegas at your tournaments? I just have to ask you that.
I'm not a very good gambler. I used to a little bit, but most of the tournaments that we go to, we're so busy with getting going from bus to gym to hotel. I don't really gamble very much, but what's really cool is when I was a kid, I had fond memories of following my dad to softball tournaments that he would go. And, I loved that. I looked up to my dad a lot. And my kids are 9 now. And a couple of my favorite tournaments that I've been to has been where I've gotten the opportunity to bring my kids along and let them watch what I do. The sport of rugby, when they invented it, it was called Murder Ball. So if anybody wants to learn about the sport, there's actually a documentary called Murder Ball. And it's about the Team USA when they, became one that they were in the Olympics. And it's an Olympic sport. And I've played around Paralympians. And it's pretty cool. It's my way of, I get to travel the U.S. I've been, as far as Texas, California, all over Arizona, Utah, Idaho for tournaments. And it's my favorite thing to do right now.
I love that. I think that's amazing. Something that I wanted to touch on that you said before I asked the dumb, do you like to gamble question, only because it was me selfishly putting myself in Vegas. I'm such a weirdo. Anytime I meet anybody from Vegas, I think it's amazing because I love a slot machine. So anytime Vegas is mentioned, I'm like, one day going to be one of those old ladies sitting at a slot machine with a long ash, even though I don't smoke. Maybe when I'm old, I'll start. That's a joke. I think something you said was when you're sleeping, because you obviously have this amazing mind, which is such a gift, right? To be able to tap into thoughts. But then sometimes when you're somebody that is a storyteller or your brain never stops, at night I'm up a lot. My mind is always racing. I can never sit still. That's just how I'm wired. But I think it's important for people to listen and know when you are a survivor or somebody that has struggled with, in your case, your story and struggled with your mental health, that you do still have bad days. Not every day is going to be a good day. And to understand that, yes, you didn't, push yourself down that hill and decide to leave. But what you are honest and transparent about is the fact that there's still hard days. We still struggle. You're still going to have days where, it's not easy, but you choose to keep going. And I think that's important to point out. And then find outlets. I love that you have the rugby. I love that you coach sports. Your kids are so lucky to have you. Are they twins?
Yes, they're twins.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Grayson and Berkeley are their names.
They're so cute.
Oh, they are.
I love those names, by the way.
Yeah. I got a story about Grayson, if you want.
Okay, tell me your story.
So this is another lesson, too. Okay, so I remember when my kids were still in the cribs, but they'd want to come out, and they'd want, they'd cry at nights and whatnot. And my wife had started working nights full-time. And it was my job as a dad to, take care of them if they woke up in the night or they needed anything. And Berkeley, the smaller one, he was always in a crib that we had, like, we had modified, and we could open the door and I could like wheel up to him. But we didn't have time to modify Grayson's crib. And Grayson has always been the stronger, you know, the tougher one, and cried less, whatnot. But one night Grayson was crying in his crib. And up until this point, I just never could get him out of the crib by myself. And this night he wanted the same thing I wanted. He wanted to be on his dad's lap, you know. And it was a lesson to me, because I was like, you know, I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And I remember wheeling my wheelchair as close as I could to the crib. And as a little kid, he can't talk yet, but I remember speaking to him. I said, Grayson, we've got to work together to get you on my lap. And so I maneuvered and tried to reach my arm over into this crib. And if you could imagine this toddler, just like, almost like a little monkey clinging onto his mom's back. He clinged onto my arm, and then I like leveraged on my wheelchair, and I, you know, was able to reach him over the crib, probably not the safest, but, you know, onto my lap. And, you know, my kids, you know, they're going to realize a lot of things in this life that, yeah, my dad's different. There's some things that dad can't, you know, do right away. But with adoption and help, like, I've never in my parenting life had been inadequate. Like, whatever I can do works fine for us, you know. And as a matter of fact, I feel like I'm more active than most with my kids, you know. And I think that I was worried about that, like if my kids would look at me differently. But I was pretty proud of, like, about a month ago, they were talking about heroes in their classes at school. And both my kids brought up me, and the teacher was like, we'd like you to come speak to the whole school. And so I was like pretty proud of that, you know, and that's kind of one thing that really got me interested in motivational speaking. And I feel like my story, has an opportunity to inspire others.
It does, 100%. I mean, I've been doing this now a few years, and the story that you shared today is just one of hope, you know. Like, what you went through in your life is a form of grieving. You had to grieve your old life and start fresh and new. And no matter who you are, this is for the listeners, no matter what your struggles are, whether you know, are going through some kind of loss of another person, or you're going through your own loss of having to start over like Rick, these stories and your story is one that's a gift that you're supposed to be sharing, and people need to hear this. So I don't know if me telling you that makes more people want to hear your story, but, or not, that's such a silly thing to say. More people should be hearing your story is what I meant to say. And so you got to keep going. You have to keep going, because it's a great story. It really is. I could talk to you for a very long time, by the way. And you're my friend now, because a lot of times well, you and I already, I feel like, are friends, yeah, because we've been in contact for so many months. Yeah. But the book, Red Letter Days, which you sent me, we're going to be sending a couple to some listeners, right? Yeah. Did you tell me you wanted to do that? Okay. What is your Instagram?
My Instagram is Rick from Roe, RickFromRoe. And if you just search Rick Weary,
okay,
you can find that. And you're like, there's a link on my bio if you're interested in buying my book. Or if you ever need a motivational speaker, I'm new to that game, but I really want to just get my message out there.
And you will. You don't, it's supposed to happen, and it will. I'm willing it for you. I'm actually doing my, I'm starting my speaking career as well. And I think we're supposed to talk offline about maybe connecting you with someone. So Rick, it was an honor to finally have you on. I loved every second of this episode. I guarantee my listeners, I'm pretty sure, will too. And you please keep going and sharing your story. And thank you for making me cry. I am so grateful that you came on today. Please follow Rick. Go to his Instagram. Get his book. And just a reminder to all of you, keep going. This world is not always easy. We're in a really tough place in our country, in our world. A lot of people are struggling, especially this time of year. It's hard at the holidays, even though by the time this plays, it won't be the holidays, but it's still hard. And I just always remind people that they matter and to keep going. And in closing, be happy by making other people happy. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. It was worth the wait. I appreciate it, Megan.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.